coupon.
I'm very glad because I've heard that there are members from the provinces that are here. So I welcome everybody, but during the introduction, we know each other. According to the apologies, I've got only two apologies. Honorable Ntwanambi, the Chief Whip, and Honorable Mabe. And maybe the others will catch us if there's a house check coming. So I think the others also are going to join us. Let me introduce myself first. I am Mrs. Kagani, the chairperson of this committee from the Eastern Cape. I will start from the honorable members first. I'll start from you, Mama, to introduce yourself, and then I'll start from the honorable members first. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm Mrs. Magala, the House Chairperson for Committee, coming from CZN. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I am Gauta Mokoro from the Northern Cape. I'm a member of this committee. I serve as well as a whip of the committee. I must emphasize and confirm what the Chair says, that some members may come later. It is a pity there's a lot of activities here, and we are few. We would like you from outside suggest to the government that they must increase the number of representatives in these houses. Otherwise, we are going to collapse. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Morning. My name is Daryl Worth, and I'm a member of the committee, and I'm from the Free State. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to start from the honorable members, even if they're coming from the provinces. Is there anyone from the province? Yes.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm Poncho Mokaila. I'm the Chief Director for Agricultural Support Services in the Northwest Province, and I'm standing in for our HOD, Mr. Paul Mohamed. Thank you.
Okay. Morning, honorable members. I'm Khabi Mokhajane, the Acting DG for Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. We've got a team of representatives from the National Department, and also we invited our HODs from the provinces. We could only get three HODs who actually managed to be here with us. One will be coming late from Limpopo, but let me start with the HODs from the province presentation in terms of what we're going to say now. Perhaps maybe we also thought that we should also have an introduction of indicating that during the year under review, agriculture was faced with unprecedented food security issues. There were issues around continued changing weather conditions, global food demands, global and local inflated high food prices, and outbreaks of diseases. If I go to the next slide, is that we had, Chair, I think in the reporting period, we had what we had a program called the Land and Agrarian Reform Program, which had certain principles and ensuring that the service delivery excellence with a thrust on creating synergies between the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Land Affairs. You'd remember that there were those five pillars as reported in the annual report that we were going to strengthen our relations between land reform and agriculture. And an MOU was also signed between the two departments to try and address the issues of alignment. But also, the model also was iterating partnership to explore strengths and capacities of non-governmental stakeholders, and also intended to decentralize decision-making and implementation at the lowest level, cooperative governance with joint planning, budgeting, approval, implementation, and also jointly ensuring the sustainability of projects through monitoring. Although we have actually picked up that this would be part of our challenges for this particular financial period. Now, in terms of the economic crisis, I think the effects on agriculture have been minimal compared to other sectors of the economy, and agriculture is a basic necessity, and demand for food is relatively income inelastic, and a positive agriculture trade balance was still experienced in 2008 following a deficit of 2007. There was also the issue around the quality of exports, also increased by more than 900,000 tons. But when you look into the economic crisis and agriculture has been affected mainly in the following ways. Firstly, there has been a decline in agriculture growth rate by 17.1% in the year during 2009. 26,000 jobs were lost in agriculture. Consumer preferences shifted away from beef and mutton to poultry due to the cost of some of these animal products. Production of beef also suffered, showing a decline of 3.8%, and consumption of wheat declined by 12.7%, as reported. Now, the next graph, which actually showing you the, yes, is actually showing the agricultural output and agricultural growth rate, and this is actually trying to show you what, okay, the red line there shows you the percentage change in terms of agricultural production, and the blue shows agriculture and forestry and fishing, and the trends over the years. You can see that the red line went up and down, it fluctuated, which actually shows that the South Africa sector remained resilient to the global economic crisis. And this is part and parcel of the challenges which are facing us within the agricultural sector. The next graph actually just shows you the issues around the beef, mutton, and poultry, the consumption over the years. As you can see, the red one shows poultry, that as indicated earlier on, that poultry consumption increased as compared to beef and mutton. The next slide also shows that there has been extreme price volatility, and this cannot be ruled out in coming years, putting the poor at risk. And since the commodity prices have increasingly become linked to oil and energy costs, there have been more government efforts will be on strengthening food security, broadening market access, infrastructure development, and investment in research. Although we know that some of the things are internal within agriculture, we also believe that some of the work can be done hand in hand with the cluster. Thank you, Chair. Then I'll move to the programs and request Mr. Mitty to present his section. Mr. Mitty.
Thanks, Gigi. Good morning, Chair and honorable members. I only have two slides to present this morning. If you go straight to the slide, Mr. Reddy. The first slide is just an departmental profile of the department in terms of race and gender. As you will see, there's a breakdown, and the large majority is 35%, but we also have a vacancy rate of 17%. Can you go to the next slide, Mr. Reddy? Then this slide just gives an overview of the vacancy rate in the department in terms of the program and in terms of the different years over the last 3 years. The first year was 18%, the next year was 13.6%, and we are currently sitting at 17% at the end of March. Thank you very much.
Angelus.
Thank you, Chair. What I'm presenting here is livelihoods, economics, and business development. This program facilitates and also develops the appropriate policies which are targeted to promote equitable access to the agricultural sector. And also it promotes the share growth and commercial viability of emerging farmers. It also facilitates the market access for South African products nationally and internationally, and it also promotes BEE. It also provides economic and fiscal services that support the economic growth and development. It also monitors the performance of the sector and also monitors the performance, the food and input prices in collaboration with ANMAC. There are a few highlights that I would like to present is that the economic progress of the agriculture sector was monitored on a quality-based view economic changes that impact on the sector we produce. Improvement on existing forecasting system are being addressed via the contracted awarded to AFC. The crop forecast for summer grains and winter crops were within the percentage of 5% of actual harvest. I think there's been an improvement in terms of the estimate, as we all know that without proper estimate of our industries, we could have a problem of economic projections. And also, 79,860 vulnerable households of emerging farmers were supported by means of Accra Startup X. And also, Accra market information is disseminated through the web-based system and cell phones. And so, Agricultural Outlook reports commodity profiles developed and distributed as information to farmers. In terms of programs, there are quite a number of achievements that we have had. As it's indicated, in terms of livelihood, 7,000 farmers were reached. 49 of those gained access to financial assistance. 70,000 they were targets, and also vegetables. Based on our annual report, page 36-35, it gives the details of the actual achievements of those targeted groups. And also 80,000 land agrarian reform beneficiaries, 32,733 and agrarian reform beneficiaries were supported through CAST. I'm sure the CAST report will give more details on that. In terms of trade and business, which is more on the macro level, 1,000 entrepreneurs were targeted, 100 farmers were trained in two pilot sites in Limpopo. 3,000 farmers were trained, targeted for training, 305 were trained, including three on leather training in Ethiopia. And a total of 308 farmers have been trained. On the Agri-Bee Charter, 8 interventions and to support the framework were established. The Agri-Bee Charter was appointed last year. The Partnership for Women was also achieved. And then also on the commodity strategies, we had an agreement that we need, in order for us to be effective, we need to deal with the commodity groupings. So we find MOEs and strategies that deal with different groupings. One, like this commodity cotton industry, cotton strategy is being implemented as one of the seven strategies. And also we've got the grain strategy, which has been developed. Now it's in the process of implementation in this current season. And also we looked at 16 economic, targeted 16 economic reviews, 8 topical reports and 6 strategical reports. I think we completed 16 economic reviews, 4 quarterly economic analysis and forecast, and 12 monthly analytic reports on macroeconomic variables. So in economics and statistics, we also targeted to publish 16 economic review, 8 topic and 6 statistical reports were completed as it was planned. Livestock statistics, monthly food security reports, and also quarterly crops and markets, and also the trend in agricultural sector, as you have seen the DDG, what she presented in terms of the trend in agriculture, and also the annual report of fresh produce statistical market. It was available. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holt. Actually, was presenting the program which is run by the active DDG, Mr. Morokolo, who could not be here with us today because of an engagement. I'll then present Program 3, which deals with biosecurity and disaster management. And the program's purpose is to ensure that it monitors risks associated with animal diseases and plant pests, the genetically modified organisms and registration of products used in the agricultural field. It also, the program is also ensure food safety and security in order as to safeguard human health, and also develop the agricultural risk and disaster management plans to reduce risk associated with natural disasters. The highlights of the program is that contingency planning measures were put in place, particularly with regard to outbreak of some of the diseases. I think, for example, here what we are quoting is the one of fruit fly, which we know very well that the fruit fly has been spreading from the SADC up from Mozambique through Swaziland into South Africa. So we did put contingency plan to ensure that we don't have the spread of the disease. Additional scientific expertise was also recruited, particularly in the regulatory environment, in order to strengthen the risk management of capacity on the genetically modified organisms. What we've also achieved is that the import of heat-treated poultry meat from China was also suspended because after the contamination of melamine, I think that was more in the newspapers because we had to stop that because it's got a safety issue. Training manuals were developed in terms of the Fertilizer, Farm Feeds and Agricultural Readiness Act, and regulations were also developed for the grading, packing and packaging of fresh vegetables. In addition, the regulation covers 36 vegetable types that are sold at wholesale. The highlights also in terms of plant health and inspection services, I think we've indicated that we were going to come up with the biosafety regulatory guidelines. And all these guidelines, as indicated, the three of them have been approved in principle by the GMO Executive Council on the 4th March 2009. And we are currently trying to endorse and ensure that we agree, they get published them for enforcement. We also indicated in terms of our E&E that the border control inspection training manual will be developed and the final manual has been done and completed. The plant protection bill, we had to withhold this due to the fact that there was a challenge with regard to coming up with a policy. There was that challenge on first coming up with a policy before we published the bill. Then also the next highlight is that with regard to the sub-program of food and animal health and disaster management, we also indicated that we're going to actually come up with the agricultural climate change sector plan. This has been, the agricultural climate change sector plan has been expected to be finalized at the end of the first quarter of 2009, so we could not, it was not done by the time of the financial year, but we managed to finalize it during the first quarter. And then also the food safety control strategy. What we then decided during the course of the year was to first come up with a country profile, and the country profile on food safety matters has been completed and done. We also indicated that we are going to come up with a primary animal health care program, and then we have a draft primary animal health care program which will be, which we have produced and negotiated with Treasury for financing for the coming year. Can we then move over to Mr. Hoss, who will do his presentation on production and resource management?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of production resource management, our main focus or strategy was to optimize agricultural productivity and profitability through the use of natural resources and also the protection of natural resources, particularly land and water. In this current year, our main focus was on the plant variety protection framework, to develop plant variety protection framework to protect intellectual property rights for plant breeders, and also to facilitate the access to protected plant varieties. We have the 3-day capacity building workshop hosted by South Africa to all to support the SADC countries, and also we conducted a survey of involving 700 emerging farmers to establish their needs, which are going to be used to align the program to the real needs of the farmers. And also in response to high food prices, we have to look at household food production model, which are going to be used as a mitigating issue for improved production at household level. I think one of the things that we were targeted to be used was to provide the 200 power holes which are distributed in different areas. This activity was halted due to the fact that available capacity has been relocated to other areas within the department. But some of the areas where it has been provided, they are using them. And also, we had to, in terms of land use, land zoning, we had targeted 3 local municipalities, and we had to develop the agricultural zones for Gauteng and Limpopo. A draft report for Gauteng and Limpopo was produced and is available, and we do in-field verification for all districts in all of the provinces, and also did a mapping of the subdivision of land as in terms of agricultural land of 1970 Act, and it has been completed. It's available in our ages. And we also targeted for the rehabilitation of irrigation scheme to support the rehabilitation of irrigation scheme. I think we have done the literary review in terms of what's happening in those areas, and also have provided the guidelines, and they've been approved. And also as a response to try and ensure that the rural areas have got the right cultivars for growth, which will form part of the proper utilization of resources. We embark on on a project where we're trying to promote to have the gene bank in different areas, which we're mostly going to become the gene bank. I think the status report has been produced. We are now in the second phase of planning and structural logistic requirements for the progress. And also, we have to provide breeding material to targeted areas. And also, I think we managed to finalize and distribute the breeding material to emerging farmers, 145 bulls, 50 pregnant cows, and 311 heifers, and a total of 506 breeding material in Eastern Cape, Free State, Northwest, and Limpopo. In terms of livestock, of course, we are targeted to establish three schemes. This delivery is finalized and full report has been completed. The schemes are sorghum, maize, and groundnut. Each scheme is made up of an average of three projects. It's currently piloted in various districts of Limpopo and Mpumalanga. These schemes are done in partnership with ERC, SANSO, and respective provincial departments. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'll be reporting on Sector Services and Partnerships. The program manages and coordinates intergovernmental, stakeholder and international relations, agricultural education and training, extension and advisory services, as well as research and technology development. Highlights for 2008-2009 financial year, a mentorship program was implemented with 12 commodity organizations. Altogether, 4,658 beneficiaries with a total of 182 projects received mentorship support. The National Agricultural Research Agenda was completed and inputs from stakeholders were incorporated. The agenda was due for approval by the Departmental Executive Committee, which has now been done. An agreement was signed with the FAO on sustainable food production and nutritional education in schools, in support of the National Schools Nutrition Program. And lastly, through bilateral agreements with a number of African countries, the department was actively involved with the implementation of the African Agricultural Development Program. Within SADC, we promoted food security and agricultural production, as well as the African Green Revolution, to minimize the negative impact of high food prices on the poor in sub-Saharan Africa. In terms of achievements, the mentorship program was implemented by 12 commodity organizations. Just for information, I will list them. It is the Citrus Growers Association, the National Emergent Red Meat Producers Organization, Cotton SA, South African Wine Industry Council, Shungu Agricultural Solutions, Make a Difference to Socioeconomic Development, National Wood Growers Association, Milk Producers Organization, Cane Growers Association, South African Olive Industry, and South African Bee Industry Organization. And secondly, the norms and standards for agricultural training institutes were discussed with selected representatives of the provinces, and we have in the first quarter of 2009-2010, that this has been completed. And then thirdly, a budget of 50 million was approved for the implementation in the 2011-2012 financial year. We have also presented a budget option to Treasury to support training institutes. And fourthly, an agreement was signed with the cotton industry and the strategy is in its implementation phase. And the directorate also initiated and facilitated several meetings with the fruit industry in the Western Cape and the South African Sugar Association. In terms of the strategy on engagement with national and international public and private sector stakeholders, the strategy document has been postponed because we experienced problems with the driver, namely that the position of director within international relations still remains vacant. I will now speak on the extension recovery plan. Next slide. The extension recovery plan has five components, and it is ensuring accountability and visibility of extension, promoting professionalism and improving the image of extension, recruiting 1,000 personnel over the MTF, reskilling and reorientation of extension and provision of ICT infrastructure and other resources. 2008-09 was the first year of the rollout of the extension recovery plan, and the state of expenditure as at March 2009 is as shown. The budget for that year was 100 million rands, and we spent 81 million, and the total expenditure was at 81.6%. Thank you. Mr. Fender will do the financials.
Thank you, DG. Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. On the financials, we start off with the OVO 23, the outcome in terms of the audit report. We had an unqualified audit report. Under emphasis of matter, there was an issue mentioned in terms of irregular expenditure. This amounts to an amount of 15.5 million rand, and this was in terms of transfer payments that a department made in terms of memorandum of understanding signed, but the we did not comply with section 381J of the PFMA, which requires that when a department makes a payment to an outside institution, that such institution must then comply with its requirements in the relating to the controls in place and systems and provide a department with such a certificate. The payments that was made was to the institutions like the University of Stellenbosch and NASFAS, and it was payments was also made in previous years. So the Auditor General outlined this, that in terms of all transfer payments, the departments must adhere to 381J. We are now doing so, and we have also then requested National Treasury for a condonement. Then on other matters, there was a risk assessment been mentioned due to the fact that the department last risk assessment was done in 2006, and the department should do on a regular basis risk assessment for the 19 financial year. We're embarking on a risk assessment exercise. And then in terms of performance information, the Auditor General indicated that various departments are still battling with performance information in terms of the standard of reporting and the verification of your performance evidence. So the department is also instituting correction steps on that. If we look at the total picture, then the main estimate was 2.5 billion for the vote. The funds rolled over approved 186 million. The adjustments estimate was 216.7 million. So the total amount appropriated was 2.937 billion. Less the actual expenditure was 2847 billion, so it left us with a surplus of all unspent funds of 89.8 million. Now let me explain this 89.8 million. The amounts relating to the classical swine fever campaign and Development Bank of South Africa, as well as the 4 million of capital projects, was under the department's control, was beyond our control, and because of, in terms of the classical swine fever, an amount of 20.3 million was still outstanding, meaning this is for the combating of the classical swine fever campaign, whereby the department received the money on its vote, and then these monies are made available in terms of advances. This is mainly in the Eastern Cape Department of Agriculture, where the classical swine fever campaign was, and whereby they then flew the post office on claims that submitted by those farmers whose pigs were called compensator farmers. And there was still an amount of 20 million at the end of the financial year outstanding, whereby the provincial department must still submit the claims to the our department. The farmers, though, were compensated. Of that 20 million, currently, an amount of 10.2 million is outstanding, whereby as last week, the Eastern Cape still submitted claims to the amount of 2.6 million, and the post office is in process of paying 2.7 million to the farmers. So the remaining amount of 5 million will be reconciled and also then be claimed from our department. Then on the amount of 1.03 million and your capital projects amount of 3.4 million, the situation is that the service providers could not conclude the work in time. So then we requested that these two amounts then be rolled over, which was approved by National Treasury in the current financial year. Then on the DBSA, there's an amount of 60 million. This was funds earmarked for the Lima Letsema campaign, Lima Letsema projects, and the DBSA would act as fund manager for the department at the last second day, the second day of the last day of the financial year. They indicated they're not prepared to sign the MOU, so we left with the 60 million. We also requested Treasury for the rollover. So in terms of the department, which it had control over, it was 5 million, and that boils down to 0.2% that was not spent. If we look quickly on programs, and we look at the first one is our administration program, I'm just indicating the amounts, the percentages that was spent was 98.6%. On livelihoods, economics, and business development, we had a 99.6% spending. On biosecurity and disaster management, 96.6%. On production and resources management, 87.3%. And then the last program, sector services and partnerships, 99.9%. So in total, then, the 96.9%, or in rand value, 89.8 million. On your economic classification items per SCOA, we look at the current ones, compensation of employees and goods and services. It was 99.9% and 99.6% respectively. Transfers is the total of 1.8 billion allocated, of which 95.7 was spent. Transfers consist mainly of our DORA conditional grant payments to the provincial departments relating to our CAS program, land care, and also in Lima Letsema. And then also in terms of transfers is included the parliamentary grants to the ARC and the NAMC. And then your capital assets payments was 90.8%. I thank you.
Are you careful?
Sorry. Thank you, Chair. I'll deal with the with the CAS program. And the program, Chair and members, was allocated in 2008-09 a total amount of 534 million. This amount, Chair and members, includes the extension recovery plan. And at the end of the financial year, the provincial department spent 475 million at the end of the financial year. I say the provincial department because the program, the grant is implemented by provinces. I think, Chair, you will appreciate that today we have the HODs. Some of the questions will go directly on those areas that have issues. And another thing, Chair and members, important here. Important here is that.
Yes,
just a question, Chair. Can the presenter just explain what is the meaning of CAS? Some of us are not familiar.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Chair and honorable members, the CAS is the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program of the Department of Agriculture. The grant is administered nationally and implemented by provinces. And the allocation that was given in 08-09 financial year was 534 million. The grant is in the Division of Revenue Act. We administer through the Division of Revenue Act. And the provincial departments are the implementers. And in this financial year, 475 million was spent, and about 60 million
was not spent, and some amounts were requested for rollover. As you would see, the highlights of this slide would be the fact that you'll see some provinces have spent approximately 95% up to 100%, which was a good performance. And in terms of expenditure, we're looking deeply on the impact, Honorable Chair and members. And this financial year, we'll embark on an evaluation to look at the impact of this program. We're not necessarily looking and monitoring the expenditure as it goes, as we go forward. We look at what are these projects? Are these projects impacting on the ground? Are we changing the livelihoods of the farmers, farm businesses on the ground? That's what we're looking at. At the end of the financial year, Chair and other members will spend about 90% of this program. If you can go, Mr. Reddy, to the next slide. It's just to indicate to you, honorable members, that we started this program in 2004 financial year, 5-4-5 financial year. And at that stage, really, from various departments, it has been a struggle to move quickly and understand how to spend this program. There are challenges in how to spend this program. The funds are given for a year to spend and finish it over that year. And because of seasonality of agriculture, there's been a gradual improvement in how the department or the grant would understand. I think some HODs here will expand on what I'm saying. And because of the MTF situation, we're able now to do multi-year projects, which is a good thing and improve going forward. And as you'd see, we've been in 62, 63, 84, 85, and last year at 90%. The head of department, if I could tell what they were saying to me, they say the whole fund will be, all funds that are allocated to them will be spent this year. Thank you very much. And on the land care, on the land care, the grant was allocated 48 million this financial year. On the land care side, we're looking at natural resources management and we're improving the quality of soil and the quality of the farms that we work on. This is the fund that was allocated. We spent at the end of the financial year about 54 million. Some of these funds that you see that spent by province, we spend over what we have. Provincial departments, from time to time, they add up from the equitable share the funds that should be utilized for the natural resource management. Thank you. Thank you,
Agri-BEE. Thank you, honorable members. The Agri-BEE Fund was introduced in the 2005-2006 financial year. The Land Bank was appointed as fund manager and administrator for the Equity Fund in 2006-2007, and an MOU was signed. The Equity Fund allocations transferred from the department to the Land Bank as follows: 50 million was transferred in 2008-2009, and as of 31st March 2009, the balance of the Agri-BEE Fund, Equity Fund that is, was 60 million with accruals from 2007-08 and 2008-2009 financial years. Second slide speaks to the second component of Agri-BEE, which is the Agri-BEE Fund for SMME development. 20 million is allocated annually for skills development, that is literacy and mentorship, and you'll note that in the report we reported on the mentorship program, and I have a report here that I will be sharing with members. And then $30 million allocated for developmental initiatives that enhance transformation and empowerment, and beneficiaries here include women and children. $60 million was allocated to the national program for the creation of small enterprises and jobs in the second economy, and $14 million for SMEs excellence model, which is aimed at stimulating entrepreneurship amongst PDIs. Thank you. Okay, we just to conclude, Chair and Honourable Members, I think that we said that we have to be honest upfront, as we have seen in some of the targets which have been identified in the annual report, where we could not meet some of the targets. And I think this has been posing a challenge. And the reason for the HOD here to be here was to try and ensure that in the future when we plan hand in hand with the provinces. What we see in the, some of the targets, you find that in certain instances, the targets were determined at a national level without consultation with the provinces. And it created a problem in terms of reporting and actually reaching some of the targets. Also, I think one of the things which was a big challenge is the issue around the concurrency of the functions. And because of the fact that at a national level, we did not set up the monitoring and evaluation tools in place to ensure that we monitor the implementation of the projects, particularly as you have seen in the CASP and the land care and also on the Agri-BEE. I think some of you might have seen the newspaper reports on the Agri-BEE. There's an issue which we are dealing with the land bank currently because of the challenges which we experience in terms of some of the mismanagement. And I think Ms. Titi just highlighted how the funds, but the issue in terms of dealing with some of the cases which are outstanding, land bank is actually currently handling the matter. But we also challenges with regard to the monitoring of performance of the department and also the issue around data collection of quantifying deliverables. Chair, the HODs are here because we also make sure that they must come and listen to some of the questions coming from the NCOP so that when we go and do our planning, we have planned a weekend of the 21st and the 22nd to go and work and together the provinces and national, so that for the next coming 4 years, we don't only subtract some of the targets, we ensure that each and every province is in a position to indicate how much or perhaps maybe how many projects they put in place on the ground, but also that will be directed or dictated upon by the funding. So in terms of our way forward and what the Minister has now requested is that all this funding which are through the Division of Revenue Act, we're going to put them into one facility and we'll be calling them all the developmental financing. And the intention for doing that is to ensure that we strengthen our ability to be able to fund projects adequately and properly. The other review what we are trying to do is to ensure that we work hand in hand with the land bank, because now what they are doing, they are actually working on a model to assist us with regard to the loan system, which will also assist us. So that farmers, I think we've heard more about the rescuing of the farms and an issue around some of the the land reform project collapsing. That's part and parcel of the project. We are engaging also the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So during this year under review, Chair and Honourable Members, we will continue to ensure that all activities and projects undertaken were aligned and also responded to by government mandate. We, like I indicated, we are going to attempt to work on clear, measurable targets, working hand in hand with the provinces. Also, as you know, because of the fact that we have now have the function of forestry and fishery coming to the department, currently we are working on restructuring to align some of the program activity and ensure proper configuration of the department. Now, the new financial year will coincide with the new term of government, as indicated, and I think these are the three areas where we thought that we'll actually focus on. There are some, in terms of some of the program activities for the way forward, I think we spoke about the access to support services, which is still a problem for farmers, and the issues around skills development to support the sector, particularly the subsistence and small farmers. We have now categorized the farmers into three categories, which is subsistence, small farmers, and also the commercial. Because we're saying the subsistence are those who are producing for their own household security. The small producers actually are those who are in fact producing, and if they have a surplus, can sell that within the market or the local market. But some of the things which we are picking up, like we're saying, for instance, for food security, it is not only agriculture which is responsible to that, but agriculture is expected to actually lead on food security. So we're working hand in hand with other government departments in the social cluster, both at the national and the provincial level. I think Ms. Ziti touched on agri-BEE, but I think the challenges which you have seen, I've talked about that earlier on, but also strengthening our biosecurity and disaster management. I think in terms of the MTF cycle, MTSF, the medium-term strategic framework, where the presidency have announced that we are going to strengthen our borders. The department is participating in that because at the borders we monitor products which are coming into the country and those which are leaving the country. Because the movement of people or even the movement of goods can result in outbreak of diseases. So we have to certify products which are coming into the country and those which are leaving the country. We will be focusing on the growing the sector, as indicated that there was a 17.1% decline. We are going to also strengthen our international relations and also strengthen our international trade. I think one other issue which was discussed recently by MINMEC was to look into the issue. I think the chair was at a meeting, our international relations, to avoid a situation where you find the local municipality, the province, and the national are in one country overseas without having talked to one another at home. So these are our primary focus now, the banning issues which we need to resolve at least by the next cabinet locator. Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members.
Thank you, Titi, and your team. I think we heard now from your presentation, the full mouth presentation, the honorable members, okay, the honorable members have listened carefully, and I'm a little bit disappointed at Titi about the other agencies that are not here today, because here we are the representatives from the provinces. You said only three, so I don't know what's happening. Maybe they have other commitments, but I think it was very good if all the HODs are here to listen from the honorable members. I think I will hand over to the members to ask some questions. Honorable Wed.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'd like to thank the department for their presentation, and I'm very pleased to hear that they received an unqualified audit report, although I don't find anything from the Auditor General in this report that could well be there. But there's just one thing that I'm citing on the financial aspect is internal audit. That's on page 56. It says, we are not satisfied that the internal audit function is operating effectively and that it has addressed the risks pertinent to the department in its audits. The internal audit is inadequately resourced and funded, thereby adversely affecting the reliance that the committee is able to place on the functions of internal audit. The latest risk assessment was performed in 2006. It is also concerned that the audit committee comprises only two persons from outside the department and believes that additional representation of appropriately experienced persons on the committee is required. I'd like a comment on that just now. I also like to ask amounts that are given to other outside departments by this department have to be signed off or have to be audited that the money was spent properly. Now, coming back to the land bank, that falls under finance. But $60 million was given by the department. Was that signed off? Was that one of these? Was it ensured that that money was spent appropriately? The other thing is I've noticed here that there is now there's a vacancy rate on staff and personnel of 17%, which is an increase of 3.3. It does state in here that there are reasons possibly for that, because people have to be cleared in terms of criminal records, citizenship, etc., etc., and qualifications. But as a result of that, there was a department earlier which you mentioned on, where you said that there was no driver for the department. I forget which one it was. It was some international agreements or whatever. And that is affecting the department in the sense that there was no head of that department. So obviously this must be, it has affected, and it was reported on when you did your review here. I'd like you to comment on that as well. Then we come to, there is a part here I'd like you to ask about my own home province on page 40. It hasn't got a page number, but the previous one I think says 39. It's called State of Expenditure as at March 2009. Now, I'm from the Free State, and I see there the budget was 9,177 million, of which the expenditure was only 5,270. So, in other words, their percentage expenditure as at March 2009 was only 58%. Why is this? Because we went on a provincial, NCOP went on a provincial week tour, of which I was part of a segment of the delegation looking at various projects, and they're all complaining. They haven't got money or this or this, and the other only spent 58%. Is that a capacity problem? I'm just using that particular province, because there is another one here where it also is not too good on their CASP expenditure. They had 49 million and they spent 41. So not spent, rolled over, was 7.3 million. They spent 85%, which is still not good enough. So I'm just inquiring about that. Then another thing, because when we went around, there was big complaints about that emerging farmers are not getting enough assistance. So what they were looking for was field extension officers to help. They maintain, they often don't get the help that they require to make the project a success. Yet if we have a look at your ENE, that is your estimates of national expenditure, I would just like you to explain that to me. We've got here number of farmers awarded production loans projected in the ENE, 7,000, but achieved in the first 6 months, 29, in the total year, only 49. 49 out of a projected 7,000. It seems very, very low. And if we have a look at farmer training program, there is no figures there. There is nothing there. If you could please illuminate on that. Then I would like to know as well, GMO products, genetically modified. I'm not a farmer, so I'm new on this particular portfolio. What is the stance with regard to that? Because of global warming and everything else, it seems that certain things have been modified. Excuse my ignorance. What is the stance of GMO products as far as your department is concerned? And then lastly for this round is disaster management. Let's say, for argument's sake, locust plague, which could break out in any province and cross provincial boundaries. Is money allocated by this department only as and when such a disaster arrives, or is the money allocated to provinces to build up a disaster management fund within the province, and they must handle their own affairs out of that funding unless the disaster is of such a magnitude that they've got to appeal for national help? Thank you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, Chair.
First of all, I would like the department to give us a thorough explanation about the cluster. What type of relationship is existing between the cluster? More so, between the Department of Agriculture and rural development, because I think if any success has to be achieved there should be a very strong link between Department of Agriculture and rural development. Then on page 6, they talk of
a decline in the year post 2009, agricultural decline. One would like to know why the decline, because according to our just you know, ordinary men observation, we did not have a drought last year. Now, why a decline in the year as mentioned here? Then in page 16, they talk about BEE in agriculture. It's the first time I hear about BEE in agriculture. I would just like them to explain as to how does the BEE being promoted within the Department of Agriculture, because we know from other economic sectors, it's, you know, BEE people are buying shares from there, but in agriculture, what is exactly is being done in promoting the BEE? And then in page 35, they talk about dealing with other stakeholders, and they got input from stakeholders. One would like to know who were these stakeholders and what were the actual inputs that was received from the stakeholders. Then there is the PFMA. I don't know whether I got it right here, PFMA. I don't know whether I got it correct that they did not comply. I don't know whether I had something like that. The truth. But I remember, it actually reminded me the workshop we had last week where we had the Office of the Auditor General who were giving us a breakdown of the expenditures throughout the year. And the most important thing that they were not satisfied with was the issue of compliance, whereby we even asked, is this issue of compliance just an issue that should be there, or is it, has it got anything to do with law? Is it, can it be enforced? And the Office of the Auditor General say that, no, it's a legal requirement. So one would like to know, if they did not comply, why did they not comply? And who is actually playing the monitoring role? And then I think the last question, I should assume that when department gets allocation, it's what they have actually requested from the Department of Treasury. And if so, I should think that they ask this what they would like to have in terms of their plans. But one gets somewhere there where they don't spend all the money. And then why are they not spending all the money if they have a plan? And if the plan is there and is not completed, it simply means that it needs a monitoring mechanism. And I heard something like they did not have, you know, monitoring mechanisms. And why? If you have a plan, you request the Department of Treasury to give you so much, you should have a plan and then have somebody or some structure to monitor the progress of that plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mokas.
Thank you, Chair. Also, thank you to the Department for its presentation. To my first question, I think Honorable Member Mkhobi whispered to me about the difference between agriculture and rural development? That was my first question. And I also commend the department regarding the planning of... The planning of the national department together with the provinces. That is commended. Regarding land bank status, it is not clear and it's not assisting us as rural people. What happens to the department if it hasn't spent its allocation? And there's this rollover issue. Lastly, yes, I think I'm through.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Mkhove is coming.
Thank you, Honorable Members. I welcome you, Honorable Dibia, but we are over with the presentation, but you have heard it, we have got the document earlier, so I think you have studied the document. Maybe we have some things that you can answer from the department. On page 13, I've got some few things. On page 13, refer to the 70% vacant female pools. What is the impact of this vacancy on service delivery? Are these earmarked positions? I want also the department, if you can explain the performance indicators presented in the adjustment budget with the number of beneficiaries accessing the cast. We need also the draft of the agricultural climate change sector plan. The last one that I wanted to know from the KZN, the reason for only spending 71% of CAST grant. Thank you. I think this is a bunch of questions that listed the department will share. Thank you,
Chair. Honorable members, let's just to comment on that first one. Chair, most of the provinces wanted to come. It's unfortunate that some of the provinces, HOD, had provincial, like for instance, the Northern Cape was having an economic cluster workshop, which they participate in. And I think the Free State also had a reason to deal with the provincial cabinet. And I think maybe in the, it will improve as we go, because I think this is the first time we are participating with them. Yeah. Now, on the internal audit, let me start with that one. And then let Mr. Fenton talk on the unqualified report and the issues raised on the ground with finances. It's true, as reflected in the report, that there were challenges with regard to internal audit. Recently attended an audit committee meeting where they highlighted some of the challenges, and it's not an excuse on my side because I'm acting, and because the audit committee reported that some of these challenges have been there for almost 3 years, and we are trying to address that. I think some of it evolves around the capacity of the internal audit unit, and also the fact that we didn't have people who can do risk assessment in the department, and also people who can actually assist with early warning to warn the managers internally where they identify problems. The system has been in such a way that when the internal audit do their audits internally, they would inform a particular program and inform about some of the risk areas which have been identified, and then a program or director will respond to that. But we had a challenge with regard to issues around investigation, particularly having to meet the minimum requirements on anti-corruption. We didn't have any investigating unit at all. So our intention now is to address those challenges with the current structure. to ensure that the internal audit is capacitated. We have a picture we can share with you, the proposed structure to the minister, which we'll be discussing with the minister tomorrow. Our intention is to ensure that the structure itself speaks to alignment of functions and incorporating forestry and fisheries, integrating some of the functions which are there. But internal audit is one of the areas, I think, for the past 3 years, as reported by the audit committee, that we did not actually look after the resources. The issue of the audit committee, as reported there in the page 56, it also was an issue because most of the audit committee comes from outside. They have only 2 members, and apparently they've been requesting for additional, but it's of our priority to address that during this current financial year. And I'm hoping that by end of January we would have established a functional audit committee. Mr. Center.
Thank you, DG. The Honourable Member Worth raised a question in terms of the unqualified audit report, and the AG's report is reflected on pages 70 to 74 of the annual report. And there it is stated that without qualifying my opinion, I draw attention to the following matters. So that relates into the unqualified report. The acting DG has addressed the issues in terms of the internal audit, the capacity, risk management. Then in terms of the transfers, the question raised there of the DBSA 60 million. On the Lima Letsema program, the department set aside 221 million in total for this financial year for that program. And initially, the DBSA was identified to manage a Lambatsi project. But also part of the money, already 65 million was made available to Abimba to for a mass production program to deal with that. So then the department, after evaluating the allocation of funds, decided that there must be a more equal spread of these money for the Lima Letsema program for the year to all the provinces. So then the 60 million that was initially allocated to DBSA was then reallocated to other projects spread over the other provinces. And at that time, the 60 million was already included at the adjustments estimate for 08-09. This was around about this time last year. So the department had then the challenge that in order that the 60 million being allocated to the other provinces, to then use the DBSA as fund manager, because it was already then included based on the initial request in the adjustments estimate. So 60 million had to go to the DBSA in terms of the adjustments estimate. And then the challenge that the department had is to get the DBSA to agree that they act as fund manager. And this was between the period January to the end of the financial year. And the DBSA, then there was several discussions, even National Treasury was included, and then at the end, DBSA said no. They can offer much more expertise. They're not prepared to only act as a fund manager. So that is the reason why the 60 million was not spent in that year. Even as I said in the presentation, the very last day of the financial year, the DBSA then finally indicated no, they're not prepared. So that was the reason for the 60 million not spent. Then if we look at on the disaster management, there was also the question raised on how do we deal with that, for instance, the locust. Your agricultural disasters like floods and fires is also included in this. National Treasury's framework does not allow government departments to budget for disasters. So a disaster first break out, and then there is a process through the Department of it was DPLG, whereby an area is declared as disaster, and then the evaluations is done, assessments is done in the provinces, and then based on that, then National Treasury is approached for additional funding, and the additional funding as an unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure is then allocated to departments in an adjustment estimate. Though for the past 2 to 3 years the department is engaged with National Treasury, how can we fast-track this process? Because if a disaster strike, now we started the process in 6 months, 9 months along the line, then the funds is only coming and it is not being made timely available to the farmers to assist them that were affected through the disaster. So in the Appropriation Act, there is a provision, and this year, for the adjustment estimate, an amount of 40 and 49 million is included for disasters, for floods and drought for Western Cape and Eastern Cape. And this financial year, the National Treasury, though this amount is now an adjustment estimate, National Treasury already granted the department approval to go ahead to finalize the process to affect the payments to the farmers. So from National Treasury here is now an understanding of the problem and see to it how can they come up with way forward to expedite this payment. I think, yeah, the other one that was also crucial was the one of not compliance with the PFMA, Section 58.1J. The department made payments in terms of Memorandum of Understandings that was signed to the University of Stellenbosch, 3.6 million, NASFAS for bursaries, 5 million, the Deciduous Fruit Producers Trust, 6 million, and then also 966,000 to the National Management of Rural Women. And some of these payments is payments that is coming from previous years, so it's not the first time that the department did made these payments. And these payments was all along made in terms of signed MOUs. As well as our parliamentary grant payments to the ARC and the NAMC. And then the Auditor General, in their audit, took it up with the department and say, actually, with all transfer payments, if it is included in the Appropriation Act or not, if it is a new transfer payment that with National Treasury's approval is instituted, the department must in all cases obtain the certificate that Section 58.1J prescribes that such institutions do comply with the prescripts relating to their controls and systems, financial controls and systems in place. All these institutions do have such systems and controls in place. So what the department then did after the audit was brought under our attention, we did follow it up with these institutions. They did confirm they do have, and we've instituted now the arrangement that with all transfer payments, whatsoever the nature is, we first have to obtain the that certificate that Section 58.1J prescribes. I think at this point I've addressed most of the questions relating to finance. Thank you.
I think I'll let other colleagues will talk on other issues, but just to conclude on the finances, like I've indicated, that we experience challenges with regard to different division of revenue funds. And that is why now we are revamping everything, and we're going to have a one funding mechanism, which will be under the development financing. We're not going to be sitting in a situation that we have CASP, which is the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, we have Landcare, we have also MAFISA, and then we have Lise Mailima. This has actually posed a challenge because now we're negotiating with Treasury. Recently, the Minister and the Minister of Rural Development and the Minister of Treasury, because they are responsible for the land bank now, met and come try to actually negotiate and come up with a model. What we are looking into is that we are going to come up with a system which deals with the loan system and also one which will deal with the grants. But we ensure that the grants, when they're given to people, are given in such a manner that the people don't come back to the department. We have an exit strategy to ensure that, you know, projects which are put on the ground address all these issues around the value chain. I think there's the intention now, and we'll be working on this model, which actually we've got the deadline with the minister. It's one of the things which we'll be discussing with the minister tomorrow. But we recognize the challenge, and I take that the honorable members will know that we are really attempting to do with that, particularly when it comes to Lithema. I think the issues around the 60 million rand, which have been highlighted by Mr. Fente. I will then allow Mr. Mitty to talk on the vacancy rate and how the vacancy rate impact on the service delivery.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Chair and Honourable Member. I think before I respond to Honourable Worth's question regarding the vacancy rate, I just want to correct the Chair. That vacancy rate on page 17 actually needs to read total vacancy, not female vacancy. I don't think it should be total vacancy. Just to go to the vacancy rate, I must just say we have a duty to actually check members before we appoint them. We've got five areas to check. These are qualifications, citizenship, criminal record, finance, and employment history. We don't have a problem with the three, which are finance, employment, and qualifications. Those are done by people who we've assigned to do so. But for citizenship and criminal records, that is done by NIA. Now, with the inception of the vetting strategy last year in June, NIA committed to a turnaround time of 10 working days to make sure that whatever we send to them, they'll bring that to us within 10 days. But this has now stretched to 30 days. And that's of concern. That's why now we cannot finalize our appointment. Now, when we asked them, the initial thing was that with the coming of the 2010 Football World Cup, they have what they call priority departments. Now, these departments are Home Affairs, Defense, Sports, Foreign Affairs. But we couldn't accept that that response from them. What we said to them, no, we are also a department that needs to deliver service to all the people. Now, eventually, we came to an agreement that they're going to give us a dedicated team of two people to look at all the agriculture applications. And this has now come down to 15 days. Again, I wouldn't say it's quite a happy situation, but it has improved over the time. But our aim is still to have our applications to NIA to come back to us within 10 days. The other challenge was with the SMS. We have now a compulsory SMS assessment program. In other words, we look at competency assessment for all the SMS people who are coming to the department. But that has now also been brought down to about 10 days, I would say. Because initially, when you send these appointments to the people who are empowered, they would say the people must come to them, and then they will work out a report. The report will take something like 2 weeks. But that report is now coming back to us within 10 days. The target we want to have is to have a target of not more than 12% our vacancy rate. And currently, we are sitting at 16%. Now, again, another challenge is with the current restructuring of the department, there is a moratorium on the filling of non-critical posts. But once that has been approved, hopefully by the next few weeks, then we are going to lift the moratorium on the filling of posts.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Mitiket. We have, Andile to talk on the number of farmers accessing production loans, an example of the Free State which was given. Andile. And then we have Ms. Titi to talk about the farmer trading.
I think the access of loans by the farmers is more of a general problem that you encounter within the agricultural sector. Most of the farmers that apply for loans, you find that they don't qualify in quite a wide range of things. But in this specific situation, it's always the viability of the project that they bring in. You find that the choice of commodities that they use doesn't satisfy the criteria of providing loans, because we want also to bring into a culture of payment of loans. So if a person just says, I want to buy cattle, but it doesn't have a long-term strategy to show how that money is going to be paid. So we're avoiding just to give money anyhow without considering the future of the loan component that we've got. I think that's most of the reason. But in order to correct the situation, what has happened now, we have tried to bring in the allocation of loans closer to the farmers, to the organization that we've got. We've got an accreditation system that is being used for people who are going to provide MAFISA out. So what's happening within the criteria that they're going to use, it's better because it's people who have got also a linkage in terms of marketing situation, the support services. So it reduces the risk experienced between the farmers and the loan provision, because those people, they've got the institutional knowledge of the farmer, so they know exactly the caliber of the farmers who will be getting the loans. They know exactly what sort of support they'll need to give once the loan has been given to them. So we'll do an assessment this year before the end of the year and see how we could improve in that situation. Again, because as I've indicated, we need to be very careful on how we issue our loans. Yes, there is a need for us to give money to farmers, but in actual fact, most of the farmers, they are still at a very high risk because of lack of other things of which we try to bring in. Like what we have done with the extension resuscitation program is to strengthen that component of providing technical support, which could be done through the government. And then the mentorship program that is done, it's all become part and parcel of how we reduce the risk of giving loans to the farmers. So in areas like if you look at the Wool Growers Association, that risk has been reduced because most of the farmers now within the Wool Growers Association are performing well because of the support service that has been. So we're trying to bring in the quality service. So we hope we'll have a big improvement, I think.
Yes, maybe just before Ms. Didi comes in, just to also add on what Mr. House has just said. I think the issue also was touching around the issue of accreditation, because we're using certain institutions to assist us in the distribution of some of these loans. So there was a challenge in terms of accrediting some of the institutions which were supposed to be assisting the department with the loans. I don't know whether maybe before Ms. Didi comes in, I should let KwaZulu-Natal maybe make a comment on that as a practical example test, maybe which you want to raise on that. The farmers and production loans, some of the challenges in KwaZulu-Natal. And maybe the Mpopo area, if they have a comment, and Northwest.
Thanks, Chairperson DG. I think maybe I can answer the question that was asked first, and then I will come to that. I think the Honourable Chair asked a question regarding the CAF, the conditional grants spending of around 70-odd% for 2008 and 2009. First of all, Honourable Chair, in 2008 and 2009, we had about 23 million rand worth of expenditures that, because of a BAS problem, the payment system, the payment was affected in March, but only reflected on the 1st of April this year. And we even contacted National Treasury to try and correct the situation, but because we are on a cash basis accounting as opposed to an accrual accounting, it couldn't be done. So the money was spent. But Acting DG, through you, I will just try to answer some of the questions regarding the presentation itself on the economic side. One honorable member asked a question on slide number 6. Why the decline of 17% in output? I don't know if we can put the slide number 6 on the screen there. I think the decline of 17%, honorable members, is somehow not correct, for the simple reason that agriculture is a seasonal sector. Now, if I can just ask honorable members just to do a very simple exercise, when you look at the graph, if you must compare quarters to quarter. You cannot just compare year to year, because if you look at quarter four, if you must put an X on all quarter four, you would see there is no decline. So being seasonal, you find that quarter two and quarter three is when you harvest. So that's where you have your, it's a cyclical sector. So you have your output differs from quarter to quarter. So that's why you find this, every year you will find the ups and downs. It's not only in the 2008 and 9 and 10. Every year you find it going up and down. So it is a cyclical sector. And if you want to compare, you better compare quarters to quarters, because that will give you a more realistic picture in terms of whether the sector is growing or not. And I think I will leave it at that.
With the farmer trading.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, honorable members. The training that is within my program relates to training that is undertaken at the Grootfontein Agricultural College in Middleburg. And I will submit a report that is very extensive regarding who has been trained, where have they been trained, and in what areas. The second component relates to the mentorship program, and I have a report here which I will leave in our office for distribution to members. So it will cover those two. But further on, in the report under livelihoods, there is training that has been undertaken, for example, for marketing and so on. So the different components also provide training in the areas that they are responsible for. So that's how I would answer this question. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Didi. Just to answer the question which was asked on the genetically modified organisms, we do have a system in the Department for Genetically Modified Organisms. We've got a legislation, and our stance is that we have a system which is supposed to be registering the GMOs, and the system is functional because it allows us to check all the areas, because it is not only done by the department. We are doing that with other governments, departments like, for instance, Environmental Affairs, which have to look into the environmental impact of the GMOs which are registered in the country. The Department of Health have to look into the food safety aspect of that. So we do have a GMO council, which is actually represented by various members of the departments in health, environmental affairs, and we've got expert teams which are in the universities and research institutions who normally verify some of the reports. Because what happens, before a GMO is actually registered in the country, there will be an application which comes to the Directorate of Genetically Modified Organisms, the Biosafety Directorate, and what we'll do is to analyze the reports and check whether those traits won't be detrimental to all the aspects like environment, toxicity, and also the food safety, and also having agricultural impact. The challenge which we've been having is not having the issue of the testing or laboratory system which will do the testing. So during this financial year, we are focusing on that together, working with the ARC on it. On the question which was the disaster management, Mr. Fenter answered it. But also one thing which we picked up, I think he mentioned the fact that we can't budget for disasters. But I think the other challenge was the fact that we used to await for provinces to do, when we have a disaster, to do an evaluation report. And then thereafter, then we go in from national. I think what we try to change is to ensure that in those provinces where they don't have systems in place, because each and every province is supposed to establish a unit so that when there's a disaster, the team will go out and actually do assessment. So we're working on reducing the turnaround time to ensure that we are able to get the reports quickly so that we can go and negotiate for funding from Treasury. So this is one aspect which we are trying to do in terms of, besides the finances, because we used to wait for the provinces to submit the reports and then go in and consolidate the reports and send them to National Treasury. But it's improving. We would like to reduce the turnaround time, that we're in a position that within 2 weeks of disasters, the report is compiled and submitted to Treasury. Honourable Member also asked the question on explanation about CAFS, the relationship with the cluster, and also agriculture and rural development. At the beginning, I mentioned the fact that in the last financial year, we had this land and agrarian reform program. Now, under the land and agrarian reform program, the intention was to consolidate the work between agriculture and the land affairs department, the former land affairs department. Now, you remember that in those pillars, one of the pillars, land affairs said they will be having 10,000 beneficiaries for so many hectares of land, which was a challenge, particularly with regard to people asking how we actually determine the target. It's one challenge which I was saying that in terms of targets, we did not do well with that regard. But the Land and Agrarian Reform Program intention was to try and align function between agriculture and land reform department. Because of the fact that we had this thing where land reform are chasing the targets, where they are measured in terms of the number of hectares allocated to farmers, they would leave agriculture behind. The intention was to ensure that the CASP, the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, supports the land reform. And what would happen, they would chase the numbers,
and who will come later on with regard to the support program. So the MOU which was signed last year was to ensure that there's that agreement which ensures that the two departments are in power with one another. So that at the beginning of the negotiations for a land reform program, whether they purchase the land or whatever, agriculture is there, so that immediately there is a support package to ensure that the program production is actually stimulated without a delay. Because this has led, that is where now you find that they'll purchase the land, and then when it comes to the production loan, you'll find that they're far away from agriculture. So the intention was to do that. Although we didn't do much on that, I think the intention of having this financial facility, I think, will assist us also in ensuring that we have proper alignment of systems and work together with the land reform department. Can I also ask Ms. Titi to talk on the BEE and the stakeholders' question?
Thank you again, Acting DG, honorable members. Where should I start? The Agri-BEE fund, as I indicated when I presented, started in 2005. So the allocation between 2006 up to the 2007, up to the 2008-09 allocation, came up to 147 million. Maybe just to say that we signed an MOU, Memorandum of Agreement, with the land bank so that the money gets transferred to the land bank and the land bank manages the fund. It manages the fund in this way. It enters into equity agreements with enterprises in agriculture and transfers the amount of money to that enterprise. So between 2006 and 2008-09, only 84 million rands were dispersed. The allocation, for example, for 2009-2010 has not yet been transferred, and the members know that there have been a number of problems with the Agri-BEE fund at the land bank, and the money has been withheld. But having said that, we've entered into discussions with the land bank. They have a different turnaround strategy that includes working with ourselves as staff, working with provinces, and working with industry bodies in the provinces that will help in terms of identifying the businesses that we need to invest in and making sure that those businesses succeed. Another question was asked about what is this BEE in agriculture, and I had already indicated that it has two components. It has the equity fund as the one that is being handled by the land bank in terms of buying equity, and the second element is the SMME development component that includes skills development, and then it also includes the allocation of monies, as I had indicated, for SMME excellence models and so on and so forth. And maybe, Chair, since I have the floor, let me speak to the agricultural research agenda. The inputs from the stakeholders. We moved from the premise that research in our environment is not only conducted by the ARC, but it's conducted by the universities, and it is also conducted by industry. So it was important that we develop a national research agenda where all the stakeholders in the country would participate. So we went through that process of developing that agenda. And as I indicated in the slides that we presented, we had to engage the stakeholders very extensively. And we finished that process. We do have the research agenda now, and we've already approached Treasury to fund that agenda so that collectively, ourselves as the department with the ARC, as well as with industry and the universities, we can implement the research agenda. I can also make a copy of that agenda to you for information. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chief. There was also a question around the monitoring. Why no monitoring? The issue of monitoring, as I indicated, internally we had a system where it was actually monitoring the programs, how they deliver and implement. But the biggest challenge was to audit the services. As we transferred the funds to projects, to provinces, we didn't have an auditing mechanism to ensure whether those projects which have been established on the ground, like for instance KwaZulu-Natal or Limpopo, they're actually there on the ground. We've received challenges on that, but we're working on that and hoping that our internal audit will assist us in making sure that we also address that part. And but because of the also the lack of capacity, so those were kind of things which we could not actually meet in terms of our target. There was also a question around the difference of agriculture and rural development, and perhaps maybe to just say that I think most of the people, when they talk about rural development, they equate it to agriculture. Mm. Rural development is not agriculture, but agriculture contributes into rural development. There are various government departments which are part and parcel of rural development, like, for instance, the issue around transport roads. If we, as agriculture, when we plan in terms of our production areas, trying to improve production in different areas, and we don't make sure that there's accessibility of roads so that the products, as they move from point A to point B, they're able to actually move smoothly without increasing the transport cost, that is also going to lead to insecurity of food. And this is a bigger challenge where sometimes we, you know, when we talk about rural development, then we think about agriculture. The other challenge which we are trying to address through the production strategy, which is going to be finalized in terms of our target by the end of December, is the fact that, you know, there are areas which we have to recognize as government that they are not suitable for agriculture. It does not help us to go and actually promote agriculture in an area where we know very well that it's got shortage for water. Because that actually creates a cycle, and that's where now people think that now, you know, agriculture becomes highly intensive and becomes a challenge. I give an example in Moyeshe, in Limpopo, where we were chair there with, during the World Food Day. You go into the area, it's very hot, it's very dry, and there's no water. I note that the municipality is actually planning for the dam there to be nearer to the area, meaning that if ever we have to promote agriculture there, we have to invest in infrastructure, making sure that there is irrigation water, which will assist for people to actually grow products, which crops or livestock for water, for animals. You go there, you look at the livestock. The animals are emaciated, there's no grass, there's a lot of overgrazing, and the question is that now, if we talk about rural development, if you look at that area, you have to think about some of the products and services which ought to be put in place in that area. And for example, Moyeshe is not far away from the Kruger National Park, and game farming could be one of the options which we have to look into. And that is why now we're working with the ARC to assist us that in those identified areas of rural development, we have the ARC going in first, making assessment and looking into the kind of production systems which can be put in place to ensure that we increase productivity. So I think there's that part which actually we have to recognize. The other part is that when you look into agriculture, I think the issue was on 17.1%. The other issue is that whenever we wanted to calculate the contribution of agriculture in the GDP, we're only looking at the primary agriculture. We were not looking into the agro-processing. Why? Because you find that of the separation between agriculture and the DTI, which is handling agro-processing. For now, what the minister has actually indicated that in terms of the new structure, we have to have a unit which deals with agro-processing. Because what has been happening, we've been planning one side and DTI planning one side. Although all of them actually have been working in the economic cluster, this is one area where now, you know, one could talk more on the effectiveness of the clusters, because that could have been done and dealt with there. But for now, what we've corrected, our production strategy and the agro-processing strategy are brought in line together. And we are hoping by doing that, you know, it will address the challenge of us being able to calculate agriculture production and also the agro-processing, because we want to make sure that in the production areas where people produce food, there are storage facilities, so that you have seen in rural areas where we have startup packs, people be given seeds for cabbages or whatever vegetables. What will happen? Everybody will be producing cabbages. And then what will happen? They'll get spoiled because they don't have storage facilities. So those are kind of challenges where now, in terms of agriculture and agro-processing, we have to bring the two together to ensure that in terms of implementation, it's thorough. Can I perhaps maybe talk to Mr. Malwa, maybe because he hasn't said anything, just to give practical example in terms of the examples of that, what they've done, because he shared with us some of the lessons learned in terms of coming up with the poultry production systems and the lessons learned by the Mpopo from the small to the bigger ones. Mr. Malwa?
Thanks, Titi. Honorable Member, my name is Malwa. I'm the head of department at Limpopo for agriculture. I will also connect with my colleague from KwaZulu-Natal on the 17.1% decline to indicate that the reasoning behind that growth rate declining by 17%. It doesn't mean that it was anything above 7%. We know that the agricultural contribution to the GDP of this country is about 2.7, 2.8%. So a decline by 17.1% over 2.7% means it's about 0.5 points, which brings it down to something like 2.3, somewhere around there. So that 17%, it is not really a magical figure, but just indicate from quarter to quarter what actually the value of agriculture contribution was of the finished goods to the total value of the sector in relation to the other sector. Having said that, Chair, the other issue is that as a result of the lack of consumer power, you can see there the agriculture shed about 26,000 jobs in quarter one of 2009. That says a lot of things. You may find out that people were able to buy one cabbage per weekend of those 26,000 people, and then all of a sudden they don't have jobs. So what that means is that they're not going to be able to buy one head of cabbage every weekend as they used to do. So the value of agriculture in a way is affected because there are no people now consuming, a portion of the feed. And if you translate that into the rest of the country, where other people cut back on consumption purely because of lack of disposable income or the shrinking of disposable income, then that tells the story why you'll have that quarter declining by 17.1%. It's just another way of explaining how the figures in economics sometimes work. Now, the issue around commercialization, or rather trying to improve how agriculture can contribute to rural development, as the DG has already said. Rural development is actually a final product. It is not a process. For all of us who grew up in rural areas, you'll know that we didn't have bridges where you'll have roads and buses passing. Either you'll find a road going into a ditch and then coming up, and when it rains, the whole week you wait until the whole water is finished and then you can cross. But when Department of Transport invests in a bridge in that area, then it means transport will never stop, even if it rains, because it can pass over the water anyhow. And that bridge, in a way, is an investment in a rural area, and that brings, logistics much easier to manage in rural areas. Same with electricity, same with tar roads, same with fencing. Agriculture through CAF invests a lot in rural development by making sure that we separate grazing camps and residential area between humans and animals, so that there is no confusion and there is no clashing of interest between the two. Thirdly, agriculture contributes to rural development greatly by actually not exploiting, but by making sure that the biodiversity, produces food or produces animal products or produces grains in the manner that we do in this in various production areas of the country. So by and large, many people will think that rural development is agriculture, But basically, honestly speaking, agriculture contributes to rural development, and by so doing, enable people to earn income, which will enable them to invest in other services. You know, you will start to see how towns develop in this country. They started purely as agricultural centers. Then you've got a small cooperative there, then a garage with a diesel and the petrol station comes in, then all these other things come, bottle stores, you know, dry cleans and all these other things. And purely because now people have got cash that they want to buy other services as a result of investment in agriculture. And that is how the sector actually contributes to, you know, broader rural development. But the challenge that the sector has is that for a quite number of years, the kind of intervention that we do, and the DG, pardon my not informing you, I did an analysis between our cast as a government and EU various EU subsidies that the Geneva-based, you know, assistance program starts to farmers in Europe. And I discovered that for this year, I think we've got about 715 million rand total for the whole of the country. And compared to what Europeans do, only for set-aside schemes, for farmers not to farm land, I mean, we're talking about something like 18 billion euros. Just to pay farmers to say, don't farm, don't plant your 4 hectares, leave it there, we'll pay you for not doing that. I've only talked about buying tractors, you know, getting fertilizers and seed, just to say, don't farm. So we can see that as a country, our assistance to farmers to do something is extremely minuscule. So we are confined, or we are compelled to split the 750 million into small units that after 5 years, actually in 10 years, you don't even see the value of that 750, because we split it in so much small amounts that they become unsustainable. And then when competition arrives from Brazil, from India, from China, then all those things are swamped off and people leave those industries because they cannot compete. So the other option that we looked at, particularly in Limpopo, was how do we make sure that small-scale farming becomes profitable and sustainable? And we started with the poultry industry. We used to give farmers an assistance for about 5,000 days per cycle. And for all of us who are sitting in here, we know how many 5,000 days, you know, we went, you know, at the end of the 6 months. I mean, at the end of the 6 weeks. And we discover that the break-even point for a poultry farmer in that part of the world, given our own market and other demands from the neighboring areas, will not be anything less than 30,000, you know, per cycle. For that person to be sustainable over 12 months, you'll go through six and a half, seven cycles. Then you are able to at least take home something more between 79 and 110,000 rand per cycle. Then you start to be a sustainable farmer. And when there is a chance for competition, for somebody to bring goods from outside, first, South Africans are more interested in taste and freshness of the meat, not the cheapness of the meat, because everybody else would have done it. So that is one of the turnaround strategies that we think as a department, and I think as a country, we need to look at, that the kind of assistance and intervention that we put as a government must be sustainable, you know, given the current, you know, commercial considerations and market conditions in which we find ourselves. Otherwise, we'll invest into these small portions of projects. After 5 years, they become so irrelevant that the competition has, you know, subsumed and, you know, cloppered them to a point where they cannot raise their head. So I think that's another step. When we consolidate all this, MAFISA, AgriBEE, the CIMA, and the CAF, DORA issues, that we need to be looking at how best are we going to, you know, empower our agricultural entrepreneurs to be able to compete with other entrepreneurs that are also playing within the global world. Otherwise, our small contributions will look very paltry, you know, 5-10 years down the line. Thank you.
Very much, Mr. Bala. I noticed that Dr. Mukaila wanted to say something.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. What I would want to share is just some bit of experience with regard to reasons that could be attributed to under expenditure, particularly if this question has been posed about KwaZulu-Natal. But there may well be generally and even some specific challenges that provinces are facing in terms of implementing conditional grants. Just to mention some few and also to engage members, the use of SMME in infrastructural development is one of the key challenges, because these people would not have access to credit. Sometimes they don't have the, you know, a good technical capability and experience. In other words, they would require some incubation in other sectors. This has been one of the retarding factors in terms of progress in implementing some of the projects. Secondly, in our provinces, we have also experienced some you know, lack of technical skills in certain areas. Engineering is one of them, but you would also get some scarce skills like aquaculture, irrigation, project management support, which are really key to project implementation. As a department, I know, yes, we have gone a long way to outsource the engineering service to also implement ID program, which assist in terms of project management, but those are some of the challenges that we are facing. Institutional arrangements around projects, particularly when it relates to beneficiaries, is always, or to some great extent, conflict-prone. And that in itself also can retard, you know, implementation. But in our province, I know we have you know, trained them in terms of some of the conflict management programs. We also tied them up with some memorandum of agreement to say how they could legally exist and how they could, manage their conduct in terms of ensuring success of that particular project. Yes, there might well be also some coordination gaps at the macro level, probably between the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs, but I know we are consistently at the level of the province working against that. There may well also be some policy or framework with regard to cuts in itself, but I think as a collective we've been able to at least come up with some direction to say we need to probably look at some review, which we are hoping to conclude in the near future. Those are some of the few examples in probably settling that particular question. Thank you.
Okay, now there was also a question around the land bank status. Just to answer that quickly, land bank currently, I think in terms of the Act, is a development bank. However, when it was established and the Act was published, government did not invest into land bank. And this forced the land bank to go and borrow money into the market. And that's where we are sitting with the crisis of the land bank, which was nearly liquidated. The honorable members had recently, Minister of Treasury, actually mentioned that we're going to allocate certain funds, billions of rand, to assist the land bank. Because what happened, we established the land bank, but we allowed it to go and borrow from the private sector, and it led to the debt. We know to the challenges in terms of mismanagement of the funds and everything like that, which ought to be addressed. There was a question around in terms of AgriBEE fund, particularly what would happen if the money is not spent, it's frozen there. Most of our AgriBEE fund, some of it is still there. We experienced challenges as reported. There was an investigation conducted by PricewaterhouseCoopers where they found some of the members there who were suspended, and Land Bank is following, is going to have civil action and criminal action regarding those individuals who were in the Land Bank. The process for investigation was not yet finalized, but is there something is happening, and we're hoping that it will be effected by the end of this December. Thank you, Chair. I think we've covered almost all the questions. I'm not sure that I've missed some.
Thank you, Gigi. I don't know from the honorable members if there's anyone, because we have got some other issues. We have got one honorable board. We've got another question.
Yeah, Chair, but besides the question, there's just one thing that I would like to bring it to the attention of the department. So far as rural development is concerned. First of all, I would pose this question. Is it the department that gives loans to farmers?
Put your mic on.
Sorry? Or is it the land bank? And if farmers, especially emerging farmers, comes and apply for loans, what are the requirements in order for them to qualify for the loans? Yeah, what I would like to bring to the attention, I'm just going to make it very short. It's a long thing, but I'm going to make it very short. And I would like the department to capture it. If you are a secretary, I would like to capture it. During our provincial week, from the NCOP to the Northern Cape, we have, when we went around the region, that we have identified 4 points which the committee felt that there exist basic resources that can be used to introduce, you know, rural development, which will then be in conjunction with the Department of Agriculture. And that is, the land is there, the water is there, the communities are there. So we felt that as a committee that if you can just mobilize and coordinate these resources, there is a considerable amount of development that can take place there. One is at Falhat in the around the Taung area, but the water being there, it only serves the major commercial farmers. We felt that it can be extended to reach the poor communities of Taung. Two is a dam called Spitkop Dam. It holds quite a considerable volume of water. And last time when we had the Department of Water Affairs, they did not even know the existence of that pond. They say it was washed with a flood sometime back. It really shocked me. But it is there. We visited that dam. We had a conversation with the caretaker. He tells us that it holds more than 60 million kiloliters of water. And next to it, there is a community which don't use that water, not even drinking with just a cup and drink. That water is used for the commercial farmer. And we say a development can be introduced here, and especially even, you know, engaging women. People can be given plots to plow, and there's water to water. Three is Smithdrift, which is on the bank of the Vaal River. And every second of the day, the Vaal River rolls water down to the Orange River, and the Orange River takes that water into the sea. And that community is there. They have nothing to do. There is 100% unemployment within that community. And the committee felt that... I'm closing now. The committee felt that... And this is a restituted community, for your information. An agricultural development can be introduced there, which is going to bring better life to the people, as well as Majeng. Majeng is more like these places that I'm talking about. They're not far away from one another. They're just around. What I'm saying, I just want to bring to the attention of the department that when you think whatever you can do, you must also think about these 4 places, which to us really are better posed to introduce agricultural development. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Chair, mine is only 3 issues. Question. Chair, this department is the vehicle which drives the food security program for the government. So it's this vehicle which is supposed to declare war against poverty and hunger. Now, Chair, I want to know, does this department have a mechanism to measure if the grants which they dispatch to the different provinces, if that money has value for them in return? Because if that money don't have value, then the money is wasted. And if there's no mechanism to measure it, if the money is used productively and effectively, it's a waste of money. Second issue, Chairperson, is that I really believe that this department, hence it is it's an old department, has a big problem with compliance. Because the AG's report, Chairperson, referred to matters for the last 3 years. And today we still sit here and try and give some sort of a reason why there is no improvement in terms of the opinions of the AG for the last 3 years. And this matter has to do with compliance, because the PMFA is very, very clear in terms of systems. So I think there is a problem in this department around systems. A system which is clearly outlined by the PMFA. Now, unfortunately, someone has to be blamed on it. Unfortunately, we're sitting with an active disease. So we must take responsibility to turn the process around. It's unfortunate that someone must be accountable. And at this stage, it unfortunately is the acting DG. Because even the CFO is accounting to the DG. I'm saying, Chairperson, I'm get worried, because at this level of sphere of government, we don't have an operational or an extended public rights representing the interest of the public on the audit committee. And that is one of the fundamentals which is raised by the DG, by AG. Now, we expect to raise or to ask the other spheres of government to function properly, but we don't function properly. The second one, the other one, Chairperson, it's around Agri-BEE. Do you know, Chairperson? The report says 500 people were trained. I assume that was on the skills development program. It should be, it's a disaster, Chairperson, that only 500 black empowerment farmers who comes up on very difficult conditions, even to access. I don't want to speak about land bank. It is a totally disaster. Those people are taking their risk presently on their own because of a situation which is not under their control. I'm saying, Chairperson, the critical thing is here, and the department can't come and say to us there is a little bit of improvement in terms of the vacancy, the 60%, which is a vacancy rate in the department. When we turn that 16% in actual number, what is the number which you are referring to in terms of your vacancies in your department? Don't say 16%, you are generalizing, or you're misleading us. We want the figures. If there's a 2,000 vacancies available there, told us it's 2,000. Because you lost 26,000 temporary vacancies for the last quarter. 26,000. We understand that your operation it's seasonally. The other one, Chairperson, you said, you told us that the quantity export increased to 900,000. How many agri-BE quantity export does that, how many did it contribute to the 900,000? Because we understand that we must have a stable relationship with Agri-SA as the major role players, but we must put resources in assisting our people on the ground to come up, because we are the only source of hope for them there on the ground as the government. Last one, Chairperson.
Go back to the question, Honorable DP.
Last one, Chairperson. Is the issue on... I touched on the BEE, I touched... Or it's they're saying that they helped 97,000 upcoming farmers in the report. If they can even spread those 9,000 through the provinces, indicate how many of them are in the Eastern Cape, how many of them is in the Northern Cape, and how many of them is in Gauteng. So that we have a detailed report so we can reflect on where is it, where we need to, or to play our oversized role in encouraging people to use the resources which are there in the exposure. Thank you.
Honourable West, this is the last one.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'll keep it short and brief. It's rather small, like a comment. I see Mapisa, that is a microfinancing organisation. Their target was 7,000 farmers. Yet they only gave loans to 49, and their target was 7,000. So obviously there's something wrong there, because farming is always a gamble at the best of times, unless you've got lots of water and whatever. Then also there was this CASP project. Their target was to assist 80,000 land and agrarian reform beneficiaries, of which only 32,733. That's not even 50% of the total. So obviously there's problems there. And that's probably why I notice here the economic crisis in agriculture, 26,000 jobs were lost. One wonders how these jobs were lost, because I don't think last year was such a bad year for agriculture as far as rain is concerned, but maybe a lot of the ground is just standing there and not being farmed. And so therefore a lot of people have migrated, or a lot of people don't want to farm and then move back to the cities and towns. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable West. I'll hand over to the Department to answer the...
Thank you, Chair. Apologies for the DGs. I had to leave the room. We will respond to the questions by engaging with the team of the department. And I think let's start off with the cost. The comments that was made in terms of the targets and the achievements was not near the targets. So we ask Mr. Ntlatleni to come in with the cost, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. With regard to the target of 80,000 beneficiaries, I think in the opening remarks by the acting DG was that some planning at the beginning of the year and in the past has been probably at some stage started national without involving provinces on that area. Also, another contribution to these numbers was the fact that there's been a consolidation in terms of how the province are implementing the program now, with some of the provinces. You find that now the beneficiaries are no longer the restitution beneficiaries that were higher. You find that in each farm you get over 100 people in the same farm, and you find some of the farms or projects calculating rural communities as actually farming beneficiaries on the land. So that there's been that thing. There's been a consolidation that we have looked at and tried to trace exactly who are the actual beneficiaries, so that we don't say in the country that we have this big magnitude of beneficiaries when actually we have a significant, which can be audited and people can go and see it on the ground. I think it's around those two issues that we have that distance. Actually, we have looked at it to be that for beneficiaries accessing CAS.
Chair, just to talk on the question which was asked, the first one on Daul Falard. we do have the intention of the Lezema Ilema was to look into massive production systems. We have allocated funds to put down the Northwest and the Northern Cape to deal with the Daum Valhar. We allocated 40 million rand to Daum, and then on the Northern Cape side, 15 million rand. The challenges which you spoke about on the water rights, we are dealing with that with Water Affairs, because they're the one who issued the licenses, where now you find in certain areas water just go only to the commercial sector and passes the small producers. We are discussing that with them in terms of their water for growth strategy. But on the issues of dams, yes, it's a big challenge in terms of prioritization of resources, particularly in the provinces. When you look into the impact of some of the programs of government, particularly Agriculture Department, there's been a challenge, and that's where we've been criticized in terms of not checking the impact of some of our programs. Currently, we're doing that analysis of the impact of the program, particularly CASP and the Lente, because the challenge has been concentrating on the smaller projects and not looking only on, not looking at the bigger projects, which Mr. Malwa actually gave as an example. There's other thing which we just held recently, the discussion with the Department of Science and Technology and Water Affairs, and that actually evolves around the issue and the potential which is there in terms of aquaculture. We have not actually explored the potential which exists for fishery development and the contribution of that towards food security. I'm hoping that now that part of aquaculture from the environmental affairs has come to agriculture, we'll be able to look into the farming part of it that is increasing the production of fishery. So what Science and Technology have done now already, they've done the analysis of the existing dams and the potential which are there. So the database which Science and Technology has done, Department of Science and Technology has done, is being utilized by both agriculture, the ARC, and also the Department of Water Affairs, and looking into those potentials which are existing. I can also quote, I think, some of the dams in the Northwest, which I know, which are just line fallow and not being assisted for production. And that's where we are coming and talking about at national level. We have to direct the funds when we talk to the provinces and indicate to them where they should allocate the resources. And I take that those four-point areas which the Northern Cape, which have been identified, will have to look into them and look into the possibilities of producing food for the communities which are there. There's a bigger challenge in that, because in terms of the impact of some of the programs like CASP, you know, it's been very, very minimal, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to report better in the next financial year where we have improved, because we have to do that impact analysis for the purposes for the future. Yes, food security is, yesterday I didn't sleep because I have to do a presentation for food security, which is going to be discussed at the social cluster. And I agree, food security is an issue around affordability, accessibility, and accessibility of food. And the way we've been dealing with it was to work together with other government departments in the social cluster to ensure that our impact on the ground is integrated, and ensuring that even at the provincial departments, the provincial Department of Agriculture are participating in the clusters to ensure that efforts on the ground are coordinated adequately. The challenge, I think, in terms of the affordability has been around the fact of not being able to come up with intervention measures to ensure that the prices of food is reduced. As we all know that we've got the NAMC, the National Agriculture Marketing Council, which is assisting government in terms of monitoring the food prices. They've done a lot of studies of comparing the food between the urban areas
and the rural areas. What will happen is that even if the people in the rural areas participate in food production, what will happen for their product to be processed, they have to go and move to major towns like Joburg. And what will happen, they'll go back again to the rural areas. That's why now the issue around the processing, bringing processing and production closer to one another. And the food becomes expensive. You look at the loaf of bread in towns as compared in the villages in the rural areas. There's a lot of difference. I don't know if the figures now we can give as an example, but different commodities. And for instance, also you look about the issue around food security. One aspect is that we've been looking at food security, not only looking into nutritious food. What has been happening when we talk about in food insecure, we only focus on grains. We have not been also focusing on nutritious food, but the Department of Education and Department of Health are actually having and trying to consolidate through the cluster the food nutrition program in schools together with the grant system and ensuring that people are encouraged to come up or perhaps maybe promote nutritious food. One of the challenges which I think we still need to do and do the analysis is the issue of changing the mindset, particularly of researchers. Because when you look into indigenous food, moroho and everything, those are very, very nutritious. And what then happens is that because of the fact that there's not been much research done to ensure that those products can be sold in all the markets and also their shelf life is improved, we're still utilizing the traditional method of actually drying the moroko and ensuring it's been sold in the township. Some of us, you find who live in urban areas, coming from the rural areas, we find that in certain instances we would like to actually have that kind of food. But the fact that we haven't changed the mindset of the researchers to ensure that they invest research also into the indigenous knowledge system so that that will assist the people to improve the product so that they can enter the market, that will ensure food security. And I think those are kind of debates which are happening now at the social cluster, that we don't only look at food security in a narrow, limited way of just looking into households, because food security also can be dealt with at the household level and also at the national level. Where now at the national level, we have to look into the massive production. And I think this is what the minister has requested, that now with the current funding mechanism, we are going to go into bigger projects, rehabilitating infrastructure, irrigation scene, and also investing in mechanization. I think that's the way forward for now. Maybe Mr. Fentech talks about the compliance of the AG.
DG, no, I did not this round respond to it, because in the first round I respond to it, and actually to my mind it is the same issue being addressed. This was a technical incident that happened, and the department did rectify its system in terms of affecting payments to other institutions, and we are now complying, and the AG is satisfied with that.
There's a question which was asked about the AgriBE, and I think we've committed in submitting some of the reports in detail so that you can see our intention. But in the slide, it captured some of the AgriBE allocation, and I've mentioned also that the fund for the AgriBE is still there, some of it in the land bank.
Thank you, Honorable GG. I think we have been exhausted now with our question, Honorable Members, and about the time we are left only with 15 minutes, and we've got other commitments that we must do as the committee. Honorable Members, I think now we're going to release the department, but I think DG, about the rollovers, I think it's just a comment that the department must look at it to monitor or check, as you alluded, that this needs an internal audit in the provinces. So we're not happy as members to see that there are some provinces with the rollovers, because there are people on the ground that are looking for the services, whereas the department to some rollovers. You know, it's not happy. We are not happy about that as the members in the NSOP about that. I think the department must look at that. Honorable, the department, I think now I must thank you to come to present to us. I think the honorable members have now be happy to impose their questions, whereas there are so many members that are not in just because of other commitments. But I think the members that are here have been satisfied about your presentations and also your questions. If there is any information, as you said, that you are going to give us, please forward to us. At least we can see what is it. In all those words, I must thank you and say have.
So you have to eat it by chance.